I want to tell you my secret now. I see dead people.
Silent Green is people!
She's my sister and my daughter!
Rosebud.
What's in the box?
Hello, and welcome to another Slate spoiler special. I'm Marissa Martinelli, an assistant editor here at Slate, and today we're spoiling Always Be My Maybe, the Netflix romantic comedy that stars Ali Wong and Randall Park as childhood friends and one-time lovers who reunite after 16 years under very different circumstances. Sasha is a celebrity chef, while Marcus is a musician who never left their neighborhood in San Francisco after the death of his mother. Helping me spoil the movie today, we have two of my very favorite Slate staff writers in the studio. First up, Heather Schwedell. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Marissa.
And Ingu Kang. Hi, Ingu.
Hello, hello.
So I've already mentioned Ali Wong and Randall Park, who not only star in the movie, but they actually produced it and they co-wrote the script with Michael Galamko. Wong has said that they envisioned the project as their version of When Harry Met Sally, classic rom-com. But there's another very important co-star of this movie I feel we should mention up front, and that is Keanu Reeves playing himself, and whose role Netflix was kind of keeping secret for a while, but then they put him in the trailer. It's kind of weird.
They actually, when I went to go see this movie, like at Netflix headquarters, they made me sign an NDA saying that I would not reveal Keanu's role in the movie. And then like the next day, they were like, here's Keanu in the trailer.
Yeah, I was surprised at how big his role in this movie was. I thought it was going to be like a one and done, you know, scene cameo where he shows he's a good sport playing himself. But it was an enduring appearance.
What it made me think of was, oh, this is just marketing for John Wick, which is weird because it's its own movie, but it is kind of good publicity for it, too. So I don't know. I was just thinking about the way in which Netflix is, quote unquote, content, and it might have a more insidious tenor to it than some other movies, because it, even though, well, Keanu's playing a version of himself, but it's so central in the movie, and even though he's playing kind of a bad or pretentious version of himself, it's still great for him, and I think it just reignited the internet's Keanu love. And if it was a marketing move or just kind of a strategy about his image, seems to have gone pretty well.
It's funny you say that this was a bad version of himself, because I found him so delightful. Like, the movie tells us he's a jerk through Marcus.
Right.
I mean, he is a jerk. He's, like, very condescending, and he, like, at one point takes Marcus's face in his hands and is like, oh, like, you can't afford this dinner that we just had, which, by the way, happened to be $6,400.
So this is probably going to be a sticking point in this conversation, but I could not stand Marcus as a character.
Oh, no.
And I think that shaped a lot of how I was pro Keanu.
I think your reaction to Marcus is extremely fair. It's also one of the things I sort of like really wanted to nitpick at the movie for.
I liked Marcus. I think.
Boo. I'm sorry. Are we going to have like a hot priest? Like...
I know. It's hot priest all over again. For those of you who didn't hear, that's a reference to our Fleabag spoiler special. Listen to it.
We all have our dukes up. We're ready to go.
No, I think Marcus, when we find out that, you know, he's gone into the family business, he didn't go to college, he became an HVAC specialist, I guess. Like, he does heating and air conditioning, which is what his dad does. When we first found that out, I was kind of like, oh, brother. But seeing the rap really made me like him more.
Right. He is very talented musically. Let's back up a little bit and establish the relationship between our two leads. In my eagerness to talk about Keanu, I may have jumped the gun a little bit.
It's justified.
So this is the rare rom-com that is not set in New York City, which is very refreshing. Although the characters do wind up in New York eventually, a lot of it is set in San Francisco. And Ingu, I know this is particularly of interest to you as Slate's resident San Francisco correspondent.
Yeah. San Francisco is a third Asian. And I feel like that aspect of San Francisco is never depicted in its entirety. So I think the only other movie that like really comes to mind immediately in terms of like Asian representation in San Francisco is the movie Big Hero 6, which was, I believe, like an adaptation of like a Japanese manga. And also that version of San Francisco was called San Fransokyo. And so it was this like very beautiful combination of San Francisco and Tokyo, and like a lot of the characters were Asian American. And so that was great, but it was just sort of, but that was like also an animated film. And so it's sort of just like nice to see all of these, to see representations of people that I see literally every single day of my life in an actual movie deserving storylines.
Right. And it also played in a nice way to sort of the stereotypical rom-com heroine profession of running a restaurant, in that there was cultural specificity to the restaurant in a way that I think is lacking from a lot of rom-coms. This movie has some interesting things to say about food.
Yes, which I think we should sort of maybe like talk about the plot and then we can talk about the food. But like, I think the food politics of this movie is maybe not the best. And it's actually like my biggest gripe about the movie.
Well, the food politics sort of originate in this introduction that leads up to modern day 2019, where we see Marcus and Sasha's friendship starting from when they're very young. And how,
like, when they're 9.
Right. They're very young, and we see that Sasha's parents are not around. She's a latchkey kid, and Marcus lives directly next door, and so she goes over there regularly and is almost part of the family. I mean, she is on a first-name basis with his mom, Judy, who plays a big role in their story, even though she's really only on screen for a short time because she dies. But she also teaches her how to cook.
How to cook Korean food specifically. Mm-hmm. And Sasha, I think, is a Vietnamese character.
I thought there was some ambiguity about that. Am I wrong?
When I was reading up on this, all the reviews and just features said Vietnamese, but I hadn't really, you know, gotten that impression from the movie, but I also wasn't.
I think she has a Vietnamese last name, but I think otherwise it's a little vague. Mm-hmm. I will say that one of the things that I, as a critic, try not to ding movies for, but also will totally sort of gripe about, like, among my friends, is...
You're among friends here.
is when, like, Asian Americans don't play, like, the ethnicity that they are. And, like, there's a bunch of reasons why, like, it's hard to do, but I think it was sort of nice that Randall Park, who is Korean, played a Korean American dude. And I think it was nice that like Ali Wong, who is Vietnamese and Chinese, played a Vietnamese woman. And so it's just like such a small detail, but it's one of those things where like, because it doesn't happen very often, it's just nice.
Yeah, that was a conversation with To All the Boys I've Loved Before. The lead, I think, wasn't Korean, but the character is half Korean. And
there's so many other movies. There's so many other things wrong with that movie.
Well, I know you hate that movie. I love that movie. Yeah. Why do you think that, what about that do you appreciate, though?
I mean, I think it's possible that some people are sort of, like, overthinking it. But I think that what is pretty central to a lot of Asian Americans, especially if you are the child of immigrants, is that like, I don't think that like I really had like an identity as like an Asian American until I went to college and then I took like Asian American courses. I think like the identity I always grew up with was like Korean or Korean American. And so generally people think of themselves like in that particular ethnicity, as opposed to like this umbrella term that's much more political than it is a personal label. And so I think also if you are Asian American and you keep up with pop culture, you tend to keep like a list of like who else is Korean, for example. And so I feel like I created like a little like Randall Park box in my brain like a very long time ago. And so it's just one of those things where like, oh, someone that I was rooting for like a long time who finally gets to like have his thing now.
Yeah, I do that with Jewish characters, totally.
Yeah, and,
I mean actors.
I mean, this movie is, there's a lot to talk about in terms of authenticity, which is kind of a loaded term. But it's not just that these are actors playing their specific ethnicity. I mean, they also wrote the script. And I think that that personal touch that they, you know, they wrote it, this was their vision, and that they're acting the characters really shows.
I think also like sort of their priorities as Asian Americans also, like you can see it in the film. I think like they both went to UCLA, which is like heavily Asian American and also has like a very booming Asian American studies department. They were like in the same Asian American theater group at UCLA. And so these are people who are like very immersed in that field. And I think one way that comes out in the movie is that Sasha has three love interests in the movie. And if you are thinking about this as like a possible greenlightable project, I can imagine like a network executive saying like, oh, you need like a white character in order to make it more quote unquote relatable. And the fact that all three of her love interests are Asian American, because Ali Wong was like, I really want to show like the desirability of like Asian American men in my movie. Like, that's there because like that's part of like what she wants to do with the movie.
Yeah, and is there any white character with a substantial role?
There's the one lady at her restaurant opening who's like,
yeah, that one lady.
Very much
name
her
can't come
personality. Her personality trait is very much the white lady.
Yes.
Who says she's a sucker for menus printed on rice paper.
Oh, Casey Wilson. Okay. The one who kept talking about the Gooby chairs, and she's
yes,
the designer.
Yes.
Yeah. I wanted to mention the chairs. I looked up what they were. They're like these curvy chairs. So there you go.
Gooby chairs. They're really expensive, right? I looked them up and there are designer ones that go for thousands of dollars.
Yes, they are quite expensive. Well, it's an upscale restaurant. So to tie back to the plot, so then...
Sorry, there's a plot.
Yes, okay. So we meet them as kids, and then we see that they spend their childhood together. And then when Randall Park's character's mother dies...
When they're like 18.
Yes, and they're playing themselves as like gawky teenagers at this point. So Ali Wong has like fake braces in. So when that happens, to comfort him, Ali Wong kisses him, and it turns into them having sex in the back of his car. And it gets awkward for them. And then we skip ahead to the present times. And the presumption is that they haven't really talked in the meantime.
Well, before we skip ahead, they have a big fight.
Oh, yeah.
In a Burger King.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who among us hasn't?
This whole sequence, because my understanding is that this whole sequence took place in one night. There was maybe not a funeral, but there were mourning for his mother. And then they had sex in his car, and then they had a friendship-ending fight that caused them to not speak for 16 years. That's a lot to absorb in a very short amount of time.
Yes, and I think, like, the character development angle of this is that basically his mom died, and he's really upset. But because she's this latchkey kid whose parents work at, like, a convenience store, like, every single hour of the day, she feels like she sort of lost a mother figure to her. And basically, Marcus is like, I don't even know, like, why you're that upset. Like, it's not your mom.
Well, he just feels possessive over his mother and, you know, doesn't want to share her in that way at this moment.
He's lashing out,
yeah.
Basically. I think one of the flaws of this opening is that some of the scenes might have been better suited to flashbacks later in the movie, because we go very quickly from establishing this kind of homey routine between the two of them where they almost have this sibling-like chemistry, and then we see just sort of flashes of, you know, they're at school together, there's arm punching, and we go right to 18, mom dies, have sex, big blow-up fight. I had trouble nailing down the chemistry between the two of them to explain, like, what it is necessarily that is causing this attraction. Because to me, they had such a sibling-like bond that the kiss in the car was awkward, and they didn't really have any time to explore that, because after that, they don't speak for 16 years.
I think I know where you're coming from, but I also feel like they're teenagers going through, like, a really intense emotional reaction, and so I was like, like, that sounds about right to me. Like, it's just, like, a terrible, stupid thing to do, where you're sort of like, I don't know what to do with my brain or my body, so let's just try this thing.
I mean, sure, true to life, but this is not life, this is written by a screenwriter, and I feel like they really could have built up the connection, because when the two do finally see each other again after 16 years, I did not get any spark of, oh, rekindled attraction. I just got, this is a very awkward scenario.
So, I will say that so much of this movie obviously depends on, like, the chemistry between the lead actors. And I did not feel like they really had a lot of chemistry. I think they had, like, a really great, like, sibling chemistry. Mm-hmm. But they did not have sexual chemistry to me. And I think it was, like, fine, because it's not, like, a super-duper sexy movie. But it was one of, like, the parts of the movie that sort of was a letdown for me.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Ali Wong's character had more chemistry with Keanu Reeves.
I mean, everyone has more chemistry with Keanu Reeves.
Oh, so who, Ali Wong is dating Daniel Dae Kim.
He's hot.
In the present. We're prepared for another hotness fight. And he's sort of an entrepreneur manager,
like,
of her restaurant and other restaurants. So they work together, and she says he's older than her. She says he's 50 at one point. But the deal with them is that they're working together professionally, and it's great for their careers, but they don't really like each other or have much in common. And we see them sitting in a car going home from some event, and they're just sitting really far away and both on their phones.
Yeah, I thought this movie really underutilized Daniel Dae Kim.
I would say that too.
I thought their relationship, so they're engaged, but then all of a sudden he decides he wants to go do, like, an Eat, Pray, Love in India, which is not really fair. That's what they say in the movie, but he's a restaurateur, so it's not wholly unreasonable that he would want to do something like that.
Well, he wants, like, a Rumspringa, right?
Right. He does. The way he presents it is, oh, we'll be apart for 6 months and we'll see other people. And he springs it on Sasha in a way that is not great. But otherwise, I thought it was, like, they have a mutually beneficial relationship, and she didn't seem all that emotionally invested either. And I thought this was going to be, like, the undercurrent of the movie, that Sasha is engaged technically and she can see other people and she's exploring, and that's going to be the question, is like, oh, does she decide to get married? But she actually breaks off the engagement on her own really early.
Yeah, she sees pictures of him with Padma Lakshmi, and she's like, no way.
But I think that sort of speaks to her character, where she is sort of this, like, not that I would know what any of this is like, but she's, you know, sort of a sharp personality. She has a lot of elbows. And so when she gets pissed, she just kind of, like, blows up at him. And it's in the trailer, like, the scene where, like, she just sort of yells at him continually. But that was a really fun moment where she just sort of wishes upon him a series of really terrible things to happen to him. And then it turns out, oops, everyone can see her yelling at him.
She has a lot of moments like that in the movie. I particularly like any time a character says bitch. They have a few different ways of, no, it's, they're always like, when at the end of the movie, when Randall Park walks into the fancy store, he's like, step aside, bitch, or something. Anyway, let's get back to what you.
Well, I did not understand what the function of this engagement was supposed to be.
Right.
That it was broken off so early.
Because just get Daniel Dae Kim in the movie.
I mean, listen, I'm not complaining. But theoretically, the contrast between the two characters would be what would be interesting in the love triangle. Instead, they dismiss him and they bring in Keanu, which is a totally different dynamic, and raises, there's less of a question of, is she choosing between this guy who's beneficial for her career, but with whom she doesn't have like a genuinely loving relationship, or this childhood best friend who has resurfaced and loves her for her? I was missing that.
And he has a girlfriend of his own, too, who is a funny character. She is this sort of hippie with dreadlocks and who, you know, is a bleeding heart, like want all these liberal causes. She works with children and she's Asian as well, which I think is probably another thing that they did on purpose because they want to show, you know, all different types of Asian people.
Okay, so this was my big question about that character. There's a scene where, like, she already knows that they had dated or were friends. And basically,
she knows that Sasha and Marcus had dated.
Yes, and she is super honored to have Sasha, this, like, very big celebrity chef, come to her house and eat her food. And, of course, Sasha is like, ugh, but she sort of like lies, and this girlfriend is like very, very happy. So my question is, was she serving spaghetti and sausages with the spaghetti skewered through the sausage?
Yes. I did not notice that.
She was. She definitely was. And they have that at that Filipino fast food.
Jollibee.
Yeah, they have that there. So
okay. I feel like it was a very important because it is certainly a choice. And if that was her food choice, that says a lot about that character. That is where I will leave that.
Yeah, I thought that was supposed to say, like, this woman, you know, lives on her own planet and, like, is giving, like, this weird food to a professional chef and just, you know, has no sense of normal, like, politeness or...
I did love the fact that, like, Marcus and Sasha, after they leave the girlfriend, sort of go on this, like, extended riff about how she has dreads and how do you get Asian hair to have dreads. I will note that I think dreads were also a really big thing in, like, India thousands of years ago. However...
Well, it's a question of texture, right? As opposed to...
Is it?
Culturally. That's the way I took that comment.
Can I reveal something truly disgusting?
Yes. Please.
So when I was like 6, there was like a period where like it was right after I was allowed to brush my own hair. But also I could not be bothered to brush my own hair.
Oh dear, I know where this is going.
I ended up with like a dread sort of like in the back of my head. And I didn't brush my hair for weeks and weeks. So it just like kept on growing. So I know that Asian people are totally able to have dreads. However, I did enjoy this joke quite a bit. I hope no one listens to this spoiler special.
And he also makes a joke about how she sleeps bottomless like a sexy Asian Winnie the Pooh.
That was a great joke. The dialogue in this movie was so
really
zippy.
Good.
Yeah. I think for me, this movie worked best as a comedy and less as a romance.
Yes.
Because it is genuinely funny. And I love Ellie Wong's stand-up. And I feel that you really get her humor in here and that irreverence and the willingness to say what is out there. I do like the love interests for both of them, that they both have someone at various points, because it really does match nicely with the idea that this is a Harry Met Sally kind of thing and that the timing is wrong. The movie itself doesn't follow them as adults as much as, you know, when Harry Met Sally in various periods of dating with too many love interests, but I appreciated that at least as sort of a thematic connection.
Yeah. When I first saw the When Harry Met Sally comparison and that movie was specifically part of the inspiration, that sort of made me realize, oh, that's what they were going for. Because to be honest, when I saw the title, Always Be My Maybe, I thought it was going to be more of like an on-again, off-again thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, was he always her maybe? I mean, debatable.
Right. I think I also went in with that same expectation and was surprised that they had this period of time where they didn't talk for a reason, as opposed to just losing touch.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget. Mm-mm-mm. Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
So I guess we should go to Keanu.
Keanu.
We have to talk about Keanu. Where to begin?
Well, so Randall Park's dad kind of wants the two of them to be together, and people in his life are pushing him, and he's almost ready to say something to Sasha. But then it turns out she has this new man, who she met, by the way, at a Netflix party she catered. Netflix is so creepy, like putting its Netflix references within its Netflix movies. Yes, and
oh, but this was a great one. It's not The Crown that she's catering. It's a Kevin James show where he plays a young Ben Franklin.
Yeah, Netflix making fun of Netflix on Netflix. And it's all like Ghosts
control.
In the Machine.
Yeah, I thought that was actually pretty smart. When I first heard them say Netflix on the show, I rolled my eyes because Netflix does do this a lot on its own shows. But, I mean, Ali Wong has been a boon for them. She's done stand-up. She did Tuca and Birdie. I thought it was fine to be self-referential there. I enjoyed it.
So basically, she is catering this event. She's not having, like, the best time. And then I thought the way that they shot this was so great because, like, you see her in close-up and then you sort of, like, see a hand go to her shoulder and say something like, I'm sorry, like, were you the genius who, like, did all of this or something along those lines? And then you see her turn around and she makes just, like, the most surprised, happy face and then it cuts. And then you find out later when Sasha proposes a double date between Marcus and his girlfriend and basically Sasha and her new man that it is, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, Keanu.
And his walk-on is just majestic. I love that part where he has, like, the wind machine on him or whatever. They just make him look like this beautiful apparition walking in.
Did you notice what song was playing as he came
in? What was
it? It's Sail by AWOL Nation, which I only mentioned specifically because, first of all, it heightens the drama of his entrance, but also Fleabag used the same song.
Oh.
For a very different kind of scene where Fleabag's on the tube and all of the
passengers in the first season.
I totally missed that. In little bursts. It's a surreal scene for Fleabag. But just totally to go from that to this totally played for comedy moment, which is cut between the slow motion reactions of Marcus and his girlfriend, and then just Keanu being Keanu, like, around the restaurant.
I read an interview about, like, how they got Keanu, because, like, I think that's, like, a really big part of, like, the Always Be My Maybe industrial complex right now. And essentially, they were talking about how they convinced him to do this movie, and, like, it was, like, a big meeting at, like, the Chateau Marmont, which is, like, a big celebrity hotspot in L.A. And basically, like, everyone at the meeting was like, yes, that's exactly how Keanu, like, moved into the room, which I thought was, like, great. So now I'm just imagining him doing that walk, like, all the time. But he comes in, and he has these, like, giant black plastic glasses, and then I think it was, like, Marcus who was like, oh, nice glasses, and Keanu's like, oh no, like, these are not real glasses, they don't even have the lenses in them, and then sort of, like, pokes his fingers through the lenses, and then they have this, like, meal that, like, I don't even know if I heard half of the dialogue because there were only three people at my screening. And we were all so, like, cackling loudly that, like, we drowned out, just, like, the three of us, like, the dialogue in the thing. But I did catch that, like, one of the dishes that Keanu ordered for the table is, like, something that plays with the concept of time. And then there's, like, another dish that has to be accompanied with headphones.
So you can hear the animal.
That's the same dish.
As you're eating it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very much a take on sort of hoity-toity, rich, experimental food. Keanu, to me, was the source of all of the comedy of this scene because the other stuff, like the no lenses in your glasses, Ghostbusters made that joke with Chris Hemsworth. The hoity-toity restaurant stuff. I mean, Parks and Rec skewered that really well with the nightclub where it's like the whiskey is served as a lotion and the vodka served as a flash of light. So I didn't think that necessarily carried the scene as much as the performances of everyone involved.
I know what you're saying. I think Keanu does particularly well with that that sort of thing, because his persona is that he's, I don't even know how to say it, like,
he has a lot of personas, I think.
It's not that he's woo-woo, but maybe, like, spiritual and kind of believes in, but not in a hippie way, like in a transcendentalism way or something. Like, you expect him to be into kind of weird stuff.
To me, it was just a general sense of larger than life. But, I mean, earlier we talked about, is this a bad self-lampooning portrayal? I think he is making fun of himself. But I didn't think it was bad by any means. I mean, he's ridiculous and outlandish. But this takes us back again to what you think of Marcus and Sasha and whether you think Marcus is a good match for Sasha. Because to me, I mean, Keanu coming in and saying, oh, who is this genius who organized this event, is such a contrast with Marcus, who is so down on her career consistently.
And then I thought, like, one really big flaw in this movie is that, like, as we are getting these, like, crazy dishes, I think, like, the main course is, like, an all-black dish, and it just looks like a dead squid. But, like, not, like, in a good dead squid way, like a dead squid sort of, like, sitting on a plate for, like, 3 weeks sort of way. And then at the end, Marcus is like, oh, I'm sorry, like, can we go get, like, a monochromatic burrito because, like, I'm so hungry. But I felt, like, a big flaw in this scene is that we never see what Sasha thinks of all of this food and, like, all of these. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can call them pretensions or you can call them, like, attempts at artistry, however, failed. And so if this is her job and Keanu is, like, really into it, like, on the one hand, I get it. But, like, on the other hand, I don't know what she makes of all of this. And so basically they move from the restaurant to, I think, Keanu's hotel room. And I don't understand, Marissa, how you think Keanu is a good guy, because then he almost immediately tries to get Marcus to hit him. For me, this was like a really great send up of that type of rich guy who is like almost so numb to everything that all he wants is experience. So he feels something. And like that extends to him telling Marcus, like, oh, why don't you just punch me? Because you know what? I want to experience the fullness of life or whatever.
First, he breaks a vase over his head. So this guy is the real deal, okay? This was not an empty taunt. He wanted to be punched. Yeah, I understand where you're coming from.
You just said he wanted to be punched as, like, a thing in, like, the good qualities pile. So I just want you to be aware of that in your life.
He's authentic, and Marcus is so scared to the point of selfishness where he's holding back his band.
But isn't that his,
by
like
refusing
the point of the movie?
Yeah, but what is Sasha getting out of this relationship other than as in the climax of the movie when finally Marcus gets off his ass and does something big and romantic while interrupting a major moment in her life, which we'll get to. But basically all he has to offer is I'll hold your purse, which is supposed to be him overcoming sort of this, I don't know, inferiority complex or whatever it is that made him insecure to do that. But I just don't understand what she's getting from him beyond like a nostalgic familiarity and the memory of his family and that sense of belonging. Because in this scene,
but that doesn't make Keanu, that doesn't change that he's an asshole in the scene. And I think it builds. Like, first, we're just in thrall of him, but it gets worse and worse until eventually he's punching Marcus.
But I was Keanu in this scene. I was like, do something, show
and
some
Marcus
kind
was,
of spunk.
Was being a jerk too.
And sorry, but the thing is that like when Marcus and Sasha finally decide like they have had enough with this crazy night and they are going to be called an Uber, Keanu calls them an Uber pool.
That's true. I'm not saying Keanu was like a good choice for Sasha. Well, I'm just saying that compared to Marcus as a character, I understood the appeal more.
To just talk about the real Keanu versus the movie Keanu, I think anytime a character agrees to parody themselves, you know, we're supposed to see that as like, oh, what a guy. They'll even parody themselves. So menschy. But, and like, it's like Neil Patrick Harris in the Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle movie or in Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23, James Vanderbeek. So it always ends up being just like this rich guy who, you know, is very full of himself. So I think some of that got kind of nonspecific. Like, I was trying to talk about how Keanu was specifically satirizing himself and people's view of him as that guy that says whoa a lot. But I think some of it just got to, like, generic rich asshole.
I think a little bit. I think they definitely did lean on the sort of woo-woo spiritual stuff.
Doesn't he have a sword at one point?
That very well could be. It says a lot about this character that we wouldn't be sure.
I did not realize until now the connection that Always Be My Maybe has to Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 40, whatever.
23,
which is that TV show was created by Nanochka Khan.
Oh, so true. Good point.
Da-da-da.
And I love that they did get her to direct this, because a lot of people in Hollywood talk a big game about how representation matters, but they actually hired a female director of color. They didn't just, you know, talk about it, or they wrote it, but they still ended up hiring a white man. I think that's important.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that they brought all of these, like, elements from Fresh Off the Boat, because she created the show, and Randall Park stars in it, and Ali Wong used to write for it.
And briefly appeared on it, if I recall correctly, in a sort of a one-episode appearance. It's a side note. Let's get back to that. Let's get back to that Uber pool, which we actually don't know is an Uber pool at first, because it's just the two of them.
Oh, yes.
In the back seat.
Randall Park, Marcus's girlfriend, stays behind because she is still in love with Keanu, or that dispenses with her, basically.
Yeah, that was pretty convenient. Although their relationship is 5 months old, I guess she was a strange character, because a few scenes earlier, she was saying how she and Marcus were spiritually married. I guess they were trying to show that she's flaky, but I took her as sincere in sort of her philanthropic efforts.
No, it was like complete bullshit.
Was it?
Yes.
Oh, all right.
No, I don't think it was, because the thing she says about Keanu is that, maybe it a little was, but she talks about how he can make such a difference in the world. And that's why in the who would you kill in this room question, she says her own boyfriend, because she can get something from Keanu. And that's something, I think.
It's the D.
Oh, my goodness. No, she wants to do good with his riches. And yeah, some of it might be also that she wants the D, but...
Okay, I have a question. So, say you've been dating a guy for 5 months, and then an opportunity is presented to you where you can get the D from Keanu. Do you go for it?
Is the guy Marcus? Because then, yes.
No, it's just who you would
it's
date.
It's just who I would date. I might say, I don't know, this is very uncomfortable introspection, Heather.
I also don't want to answer this.
Wow.
What about you, Ingu?
Keanu all the way, baby.
Back to the Uber pool.
Oh, so there, I think the Sasha character sort of comes over to Marcus's side and saying, you know, Keanu, he was a little bit much. And then they're fighting a little bit about how he has a band and he won't turn it into a bigger thing. He's so content to be small time. And she, you know, she's so pretentious with her restaurateur stuff. Why can't she just, you know, be herself? And then that turns into a kiss. And this kiss parallels their original first kiss in that the first time Ali Wong kisses him and then apologizes and then he kisses her. That's when they're teenagers. And this time he kisses her and then apologizes and she goes in for it.
This scene to me exemplified a lot of the problems I had with the central relationship, in that it was doing the rom-com thing where the two leads argue and are theoretically calling each other on their shit, which is all very well and good, and I enjoy those scenes as much as anyone. The problem is that nothing Marcus said resonated for me. One of the things he says is that Sasha keeps winding up with these guys who aren't good for her, but Sasha already dumped the fiance who wasn't good for her and already walked out on Keanu when he got ridiculous. So that really didn't seem to be calling her out on anything. She seems well aware that both of those guys were not good for her. And then his other criticism has to do with her career. And I think another major flaw of this movie is that the movie ends without ever there being a scene where he does go to her restaurant at one point, but he doesn't sit and have a meal at the restaurant she's already established. So
that's
we
he can't afford it.
I mean, he knows the owner, okay? But I'm just saying, like, we don't actually know if his criticisms of her restaurant are true, and neither does he. Like, we know a little bit from the decor, oh, the gooby chairs, this, that, and the other thing, but that's not coming from Ali Wong for the most part. That's coming from the people around her and her team. I would have liked to establish whether she had actually sold out or if she just had a legitimately a business that she put herself into, and that's what he's been mocking this whole time.
Yeah, I think the movie's perspective is that he's a little bit right, but I think that's interesting in that this movie tries to be very politically correct in saying that Sasha's going to be the one with the career, and the way this is going to end is that it's fine that, you know, she's going to be the more prominent one who makes more money. But are they trying to take her down a peg a little bit in that? Because you do see, like, oh, maybe Marcus is just kind of shitty. Like,
there is also a line, I think, where he says, like, Asian food is, like, supposed to be like this. And then he, like, names, like, a bunch of things. I forget exactly, but it's something like big portions and, like, everyone gets...
Oh, yeah, big bowl.
Yeah, and, like, everyone should get to have some. And, like, it shouldn't be...
A tiny shot glass is what he... Because they earlier in the movie, they eat something out of a tiny shot glass. But crucially, it's not Sasha's restaurant.
Yes. And, like, at like earlier in the movie, she had described a like her new restaurant, which is called Saintly Fair. And it was going to be, like, trans-denominational fusion food. I don't know what
which
that means.
Which is just meaningless, I think.
Transcendent. Transgressive. She has that whole scene where she's describing it on the phone. And Marcus, in one of the only good chemistry moments I felt in the whole movie between the two of them, he calls her out on her phone voice. Which, as someone who speaks completely differently on the phone than I do in day-to-day life, although maybe I speak differently on podcasts, I don't know. Who can be that self-aware? But he's making fun of her phone voice, and her friend, who we haven't even mentioned, her obligatory rom-com best friend.
Michelle Batu played her. I'm probably saying the last name
wrong.
Veronica,
who's heavily pregnant for much of the movie and is gay, another sort of progressive,
and
bonafide.
Also grew up with them, apparently, though you don't see her as a kid.
You see her very briefly.
Oh, you do?
In a scene in the middle school where they're eating lunch.
Nice.
I actually didn't make the connection it was her on first viewing, but I went back and she is sitting with them. It's sort of throwaway, but it's, you know, a good detail to include. But so she walks in after they've had this argument about the phone voice, and Sasha, trying to be clever, is like, oh, goodbye, or ta-ta, Veronica, or something. And she turns and she says, don't use your phone voice on me, bitch.
Yes, that was another good bitch.
So, going back to the food stuff, I think that, like, essentially, like, the resolution of this movie ends with, like, her eventually opening a new restaurant, like, after the one that she opens in San Francisco called Saintly Fair. And it turns out it's a Korean restaurant using recipes that she learned from Marcus's mom.
And it's named after her, too. It's called Judy's.
Judy's Way. Yeah.
Basically, there's like a dish that we see like at the beginning of the movie where Judy teaches Sasha how to make it. And then that's sort of like the dish that Sasha shows Marcus as like a sign that like, okay, like now I'm coming back to my roots, which aren't like 100% her roots.
But she had already planned this restaurant before Marcus came on the scene.
Oh, no, she didn't. You're like...
No.
She had an opening coming up in New York.
She did, and in real life she would have, but we can just chalk that up to movie magic.
I did not take this as her responding to his criticism.
It was.
I took this as something that she
you're
was
wrong,
worried.
You're being too literal. On the food politics, I wanted to recommend a piece our former colleague Jenny Zhang wrote on eater.com that is about, you know, the authenticity versus not authenticity debate and how it sort of boxes other cultures into a corner with with what's seen as real. And I think it is a really interesting question and one of this movie's blind spots.
And I think more specifically, when you tell non-white cooks or chefs, like, you have to make this particular type of food and you have to make it authentic, then that doesn't give them the creativity to play around, which is sort of what I think a lot of, like, foodie culture is about, like, trying new flavor profiles and such. And so Marcus telling her, like, actually, you have to make, like, the food that, like, my mom made in order to be, like, real Asian. It's not great. Like, it's problematic. And I think in 5 years, people are going to be like, whoa, this movie was cute, but, like, can you believe?
There is an unevenness, too, in that Sasha performs two grand romantic gestures for Marcus. She buys all of his band's merch under a fake name, and also she opens a restaurant dedicated to his mom, which I don't understand what the reciprocation is here. Well, as I've said so many times,
he agreed to try out for this bigger venue with his band Southeast after bungling the first audition and showing up drunk.
And peeing on an amp.
Yes.
Which is a scene I did not believe, by the way. I don't know why, like, every movie feels like it has to have, like, a pee scene or a barf scene.
Which is worse or better.
And also, we knew him as a stoner, not a drunk. So shouldn't he have done something with that?
Here, I think, is where the movie tried to redeem him, but for me, didn't meet me all the way, in that I didn't really understand the psychology of exactly why Marcus was so stuck after his mother's death for such a long time beyond grief, just generally. Like, was he stuck because he associates his neighborhood and his life with his mom, and he feels that moving on would be to forget her? Is it just that he never grew up and he's sort of eternally 18? It was implied, but they didn't really nail it down. And in the scene with his father, when his father's like, I don't need a caregiver, you need to go live your life, I just wish they had nailed that down a little bit more for me.
For me, it was pretty satisfying. I think there's, like, a whole running theme where Marcus is, like, sort of increasingly angry at, like, the, I don't know if whitening is the right word, but, like, sort of, like, the hipsterification of San Francisco. And there's, like, a whole thing where, like, he does, like, a big rant about, like, all of these, like, hipster bars that sort of look alike constantly opening up in San Francisco. And I think the implication is that, like, the more of these places that open up, the harder it is for sort of, like, immigrant neighborhoods like his to stay alive. And so for me, the fact that, like, he only wanted to play at this, like, one club that was, like, in his neighborhood, like, for me, that made sense.
For me, if the movie had ended with him making a case for being content with that one club, I think it would have been stronger than him growing for reasons that are unclear to me. I don't understand. Was this him getting over his mother's death that he moves on? It's just very muddled. I think that Sasha actually had a much more interesting sense of closure.
No. I disagree with you there. But go on.
Even though she repairs things with her parents a little bit?
She doesn't address her anger at being left alone, which, like, is still really there. So her parents agree to, or what happens is her parents go to her restaurant and they pay full price. They don't even say that they know her. And she's so proud that they actually did that and ate her food and were willing to buck their usual cheapness. But that doesn't make up for her being left alone as a kid.
But it's at least a start toward repairing their relationship. I don't think it was intended to heal everything with one meal, but it was them showing up when they hadn't shown up. I mean, they showed up earlier in the movie and she kind of dismiss them. But I mean, what did Marcus ever do for her, Heather?
Wait, let's try to figure this out. Like, what does Marcus do for her? I think, like, Marcus makes sense as a symbol, but now I'm coming around to Marissa's way of thinking in that, like, what did he concretely do
even in the speech where he finally gets a suit? And because the first time that he goes with her to an event, he wears a T-shirt because she told him, you know, rich people aren't into suits anymore. Fair enough. Then he has to wear this awful coat that is the only one that the venue has where the man died and is like twice his size. So he's standing at this really formal event where Sasha is you know, a guest of honor and walks the red carpet. And he's holding her purse and he looks ridiculous. And she still turns in front of all of the cameras and points to him and says, "That's my boyfriend."
Yeah.
And he is very offended because she calls him a regular guy. But he's worked really hard to be a regular guy. He's clinging to being a regular guy. I don't get this.
She has a great dress in that scene, by the way.
She does. So then later when he comes back in a suit and seems, you know, to sort of embrace actually supporting her, which incidentally, both of those other two crappy boyfriends did support her career, Keanu and Daniel Dae Kim. He finally comes around to that. And his whole speech was about, "I want to do this. I want to do this. I want to hold your
with
purse."
You and yeah,
it was very like, why you? Like, couldn't anyone?
Well, she had a crush on him when
they
were
little. This is very like heterosexual girl guy, therefore must
like,
be together.
Like low bar for men. Yeah.
I liked this movie a lot, by the way. As much as it doesn't sound like that, I think the work plot, which most good romantic comedies have a solid work plot, was so much more interesting to me that I almost wish the romance had been the B story and it had focused more on Sasha and her family and what it is she wants and coming to terms with her food and making food on her own terms.
I guess you could argue that he reconnects her with her roots. Like maybe she wouldn't have made up to the extent that she did with her parents if Marcus didn't pave the way for that, but that's a stretch.
Does Marcus have any interaction with them?
With what?
With her parents? Yeah, I don't know if he's ever even met them.
I don't know.
And there's like a montage where they're having fun around San Francisco and he sees a statue and he goes, boop. So he does that.
He does boop to a nipple, I believe.
Yes.
What a guy.
I apologize, by the way, on behalf of all heterosexuals. For the heterosexuality of this movie.
I don't mean to single this movie out specifically, but it was notable to me that a lot of writers who are smart and progressive and thoughtful on race and gender and sexuality give no thought to disability. And that only occurred to me in this movie because there's a throwaway line about how many people in San Francisco have placards for parking. And then Sasha says something along the lines of, and then they're walking around, they're able-bodied. This is a very common gripe among disabled people because not all disabilities are visible and there are plenty of disabilities that aren't evident by looking at someone that would require a parking placard. I know this was supposed to establish like San Francisco bona fides, but just it was such a strange line and it kind of stuck out to me.
So I have a possible rebuttal.
Okay.
And this is like based on a feeling and not like facts.
All right, Donald Trump.
This to me, I saw this criticism a lot on Twitter. And I don't feel like this joke is on people with disabilities. I think this joke is like based on like how I perceive it. Like in Sasha's view, Chinese American people faking disability in order to get those placards. And it is a stereotype that I have never come across, but they're in like a very Asian neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole scene is sort of like them coming out of like a dim sum restaurant. And I feel like she was saying something about like Chinese American people. And Ali Wong is a person who grew up in San Francisco. And so that's, I feel like, the reading that I would have.
Right. And I understand that. I'm just also, just in a movie that is making such an effort to be inclusive in other ways, it struck the wrong chord with me. Just because it is such a common experience for people with invisible disabilities to be accused of faking it for good parking. I don't know. Didn't rub me the wrong way.
Just to rebut just a little bit more, I don't know if that is what she was going for in terms of sort of like making fun of these scammers. But if that is the case, I actually really liked that joke because I feel like so much of this movie is about like having all of these like very specific Asian American cultural touchstones. Like, there's like a whole like emphasis on characters like coming into the house and like taking off their shoes, or there's like plastic on the furniture. And
is that an Asian thing? My grandma does.
I don't think it's only an Asian thing, but okay. It's definitely a some Asians thing. And there were definitely, like, I think, like, the big dish that sort of, like, ties in, like, all of the movie together is, like, kimchi jjigae, which is, like, a thing that I have eaten, like, a million times. And so, for me, it's nice to have, like, all of these, like, little cultural details. But it's also sort of, like, nice for Asian Americans to be able to make fun of Asian Americans and to, like, not sort of, like, put themselves on a pedestal. And so, that's what I thought, like, the joke was doing.
I buy that as an explanation. I still think it was perhaps less considered than some of the other areas, but I do buy that explanation. Thank you, Ingo. You've eased my mind a little bit.
Well, I was also wondering what you guys think of all the jokes about Asian Americans being cheap. I saw at least one review that was appalled at this, but I saw that in a similar way, where it was Ali Wong and Randall Park feeling like they could poke fun at their own or stereotypes in their own community.
Yeah, that writer who was against it, like, had never met an Asian.
So we liked the rap at the end, yes?
I liked all of, as much as I've been down on Marcus this entire podcast, I loved all of his raps, and I do in fact think he is talented.
Do you think that the rap makes up for his shittiness, and therefore the rap makes him a good partner for Sasha?
No.
Well, there's something admirable about him staying loyal to his bandmates after all these years.
Is it? He's holding them back. They very vocally want to do more.
Okay. You know, there's a point too. I also thought the rap was very specific. Like, when I first heard he was a rapper, I was like, oh no. But then, like, maybe it's this San Francisco specific thing where it was also kind of...
all San Francisco rappers rap like that.
I don't know. I was surprised by how much I liked it.
I would listen to I Punched Keanu Reeves on the radio. No question.
Is that the name of the song?
I believe that is the name of the final song that plays over the credits. I thought all of his songs were good. I thought the band was great. Didn't feel...
Even the tennis ball song?
The tennis ball song was fine. And obviously they were trying to... I love there's a shot of a Google search on his computer that's what color is a tennis ball. I don't know if you caught that. I guess maybe as a... Because it's random that this band member decides that they're going to do tennis balls. And so I guess they write the song around that. But I did wonder if also it was they were trying to do a play on the name of the band, which is Hello Peril, which is a play on Yellow Peril.
Oh, really?
Are tennis balls yellow? That. I always thought they were green.
I think of them as green. You know, some of the jokes in this movie didn't land. And I forgive it.
I thought it was extraordinarily funny.
Yes.
It was very funny.
And, like, I did not think that they were, like, great dramatic actors, which goes back to what we were talking about, how the romance is, like, a little tepid. Mm-hmm. But they are both comedians, and it is an incredibly funny script. And, yeah, it is definitely... I guarantee if you see it, you will probably watch it on your laptop alone and still laugh out loud. That is a promise I feel I can confidently make.
I will say for it that I think it, in the pantheon of Netflix romantic comedies, it is toward the top.
It's one of the better ones, for sure. Well, I think that the Netflix rom-coms sort of get pegged as, like, middling, and that has been my impression of some of them. What was that? Set It Up was kind of and the Someone Great. But this was like an actual movie.
Right. As opposed to what a lot of these Netflix rom-coms feel like, which is a TV movie. This felt like a big mainstream picture, which perhaps is why they showed it in theaters to critics. A lot of Netflix movies...
And did that crazy NDA thing.
Right. A lot of Netflix movies critics can watch from the comfort of their laptop, but I'm interested, Ingu, that you saw it in theaters and, you know, you were all laughing together and there was that communal experience, because I watched it at home by myself and I did not experience that, but I am enjoying talking to the two of you about it very much.
Did you laugh out loud?
I did not. I'm not a big laugher out loud. Except when you and Heather say funny things.
Oh, thank you.
Should we note the Mariah Carey thing, or is it just like
I don't care.
Okay.
It has no thematic connection to this
movie.
Yeah,
it doesn't really.
The title of this movie has no thematic connection to this movie. Again, I like the movie. Hated Marcus liked the movie. Okay. Well, I did not see this movie in a theater, but I am thrilled to have the same sense of community by talking to both of you. Thank you, Heather.
You're welcome. Thanks, Marissa.
Thanks, Ingu.
Thanks, bitch.
Please subscribe to the Slate Spoiler Special podcast feed. And if you like the show, please rate and review it in the Apple Podcast Store or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have suggestions for movies or TV shows we should spoil, or if you have any other feedback you'd like to share, send it to spoilers@slate.com. Our producer is Danielle Hewitt, and our engineer is Merritt Jacob. Thanks for listening.